Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, November 30th, 2017. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Action Urge to Curtail Violence, 12-Year-Old Girl Shot While Fleeing Sound of Gunfire by Tony Reed and Claire Hettinger, Herald and Review, Decatur. Community leaders responded with concern Wednesday to the shooting of a 12-year-old girl in a Decatur neighborhood the night before when she was wounded while apparently fleeing from gunfire a few blocks away. The incident comes as the city is set to finish 2017 with more shootings than at least any of the past 6 years. At least four of those shootings involve children and adolescents who are 16 or younger. As a parent, we're faced with not being able to let our children go outside and play because we fear for them, said the Reverend Courtney Carson, a Decatur school board member who visited the scene after the shooting Tuesday night to talk with residents and offer prayers. It's hard to let them watch TV because that is corrupted, and it's hard for them to be on social media because that is corrupted and toxic. The girl, who has not been identified by police, was shot shortly after 6 p.m. as she headed home after apparently hearing shots fired moments earlier in the area of East Clay and South Maffitt Streets, Detective Sergeant Steve Carroll said. She was running in the 800 block of East Main Street when she was hit by a single bullet in the leg. She was taken to a local hospital for treatment, Carroll said, and is expected to be okay despite injuries to her calf. Police said they don't yet have a motive for the shootings, and they did not provide a suspect description Wednesday. Cars were seen leaving that area, and when the girl got hit, cars were seen driving down the street, Carroll said. The shooting at Clay and Maffitt was within a minute of the shooting involving the girl. Carroll said five shell casings were recovered from the scene where the girl was wounded, and a car had been hit multiple times at the Clay and Maffitt shooting scene. On Tuesday night, police said witnesses told them a group in a car had been in an argument with another group of people who may have been on a sidewalk or in a house. It was not clear if the girl was affiliated with anyone involved in the argument. Carroll said the investigation is ongoing, and police and detectives were looking for help from witnesses and anyone with knowledge of the shootings. Call police at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Carson, who volunteers mentoring young people and has long spoken out on issues of gun violence, said he planned to meet with the family of the wounded girl Wednesday. He said the Decatur community must do more to stop the random gun violence, which has now wounded one of our beautiful daughters. Carson said he had reached out to other church and community leaders to find common ground for a coordinated approach to try to bring peace back to the streets of the city. Carson said a multifaceted approach is needed to curb gun crime, from advocating for gun laws that keep weapons out of the hands of criminals to demanding tough sentences for those convicted of gun crime. He said it was past time to get out in front of the violence and do something, rather than speaking out only after a shooting has happened. Because right now, we are reacting to murder versus having a proactive approach to our babies getting shot and wounded and dead in the streets, he said. The shooting continues a violent period for Decatur, as the Herald and Review reported earlier this month. The most recent police data shows 82 shootings for the first 10 months of 2017, compared with 54 for all of 2016 and 75 for all of 2015. 8 homicides also were reported during the period, 4 more than last year. Since then, a 48-year-old man from Effingham was found shot to death in the 1600 block of North Edward Street on November 18th. A number of other shootings have occurred, but an official total for November was not available. Community leaders point to data that shows violent crime in Decatur is lower than similar-sized cities such as Champaign and Springfield. Police also say it's lower than the 1990s, when homicides reached into the teens and the city received a reputation as being dangerous. In addition to Tuesday night shooting, At least three others this year have involved children. They were Justin Lee Murphy Jr., 2, was shot and killed October 14th. His 17-year-old uncle, Zachary M. Farrago, has been charged as an adult with first-degree murder in the case. Farrago told police that he shot his nephew with a gun he did not realize was loaded while the two were playing cops and robbers. A 12-year-old boy was shot May 17th when a man forced his way into a residence in the 400 block of South Maffitt Street. A 16-year-old Decatur girl suffered serious injuries after she was shot twice July 10th as she chatted with friends in the 1400 block of North Edward Street. Carson said tackling the societal ills that spark gun violence won't be easy or quick, but he said the alternative is leaving children to face a world increasingly at odds with their well-being and safety. To make change, he said, people need to believe they can do better. You've got to have faith we can do it, and I have that faith, he added. The violence is nothing new, said Sue Lawson, president of the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations, or CONO. If you go into some of those neighborhoods, you hear gunshots in the daytime, Lawson said. Violence has become so frequent that it no longer surprises her. But Lawson said multiple organizations work together to build community and improve Decatur neighborhoods. The scene of the shooting Tuesday was in a mostly residential area east of downtown between Prairie Avenue and Wood Street. The police are doing everything they can, and they can't babysit every street in town, Lawson said. The trend toward juvenile-involved shootings is something executive director of the Boys and Girls Club, Bruce Jeffrey, said is just senseless violence. It's unfortunate that we are dealing with gun violence in our community, he said. Some people don't have a value of life. The Boys and Girls Club functions as a safe place for children to hang out after school and to stay out of trouble, Jeffrey said. Macon County Sheriff Howard Buffett announced in September that his private foundation had given the organization $710,000 to build a dedicated area for teens. I think what happens is young kids always look up to the big kids in the neighborhood, and if the big kids are carrying guns around and selling dope, that is what they see, and that becomes their role model, Buffett told the Herald and Review at the time. And that's true anywhere in the world. Not just in Decatur. Poinsettias ready to dazzle. Christmas flowers prove challenging to grow, maintain. By Jalen Cook, Herald and Review. Decatur. It's easy to appreciate the beauty that poinsettias add to the holiday season, but experts say the plants can be hard to grow without the right amount of attention and patience. We started growing our poinsettias in about late August, said Josh McGrath, horticultural superintendent for the Decatur Park District. It's a lot of work to grow just one. McGrath and his team grew 700 poinsettias this year and used 200 of them to create a colorful festive display at the Schaub Floral Center, 3415 East Lost Bridge Road. The rest of the flowers will either be planted at some of the Park District's other properties or will be sold during the Floral Center's annual poinsettia sale on Friday and Saturday. The center is open from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. Regarded as a traditional Christmas flower, poinsettias will bloom based on how much sunlight they receive, McGrath said. Sometimes, he said, it can be tricky to determine how long the plant should be kept in the dark. Many poinsettias require at least 12 hours of sunlight and 12 hours in the dark, but McGrath said that some new varieties of the flowers are bred to bloom differently. New varieties turn colors automatically without putting them in a closet in the dark, he said. Natural night and day cycles are fine for the new variety. Johann Maple, owner of Svetson's Florist, said it is also important to water the flowers properly. Svensson annually starts growing poinsettias in late July or early August, and they sell the flowers in a variety of colors, including winter rose, iced punch, and marble. If a poinsettia becomes too dry, Maple said, it may lead to the yellow or green nodules in the center of the flowers to fall off. A lot of people think of the colored leaves as the bloom, but the little yellow bracts in the middle are actually the bloom, she said. If they dry up, then the colored leaves will not reproduce. McGrath warns against overwatering the plants, too. The soil should be allowed to dry slightly in between watering, but certain environments ultimately dictate how. Often, someone should water their poinsettias. Warm atmosphere may require the plants to be watered every other day or every 3 days. In cooler, drier environments, poinsettias may need water every 4 or 5 days. In our greenhouse, we're watering them every other day. But if you're in a house where it's a little darker, once or twice a week is plenty, McGrath said. In addition to the care growers and owners show toward their poinsettias, veterinarians encourage pet owners to keep an eye on their furry friends if they plan to display the plants around the house. Poinsettias can be mildly toxic, but not deadly, to dogs and cats if ingested, said Dr. Larry Baker, senior veterinarian at Northgate Pet Clinic. Pets may experience gastric upset after eating poinsettia leaves, he said, and in most cases, the symptoms will pass on their own. However, Baker said a trip to the vet may be necessary if a pet eats an excessive amount of the leaves. I would suggest being very cognizant of things that smell good, he said. If there's any doubt that people have about something, they should keep their pet away from it. 5 poinsettia facts. No flowers say Christmas like the beautiful poinsettia. Here are 5 facts about this traditional Christmas plant. Poinsettias are part of the Eurobiaceae or spurge family. Botanically, the plant is known as Euphorbia pulcherrima. Joel Roberts Poinsett introduced the poinsettia plant to the United States from Mexico. Poinsett was a botanist, physician, and the first United States ambassador to Mexico in the 19th century. Poinsettias are not poisonous. A study at Ohio State University showed that a 50-pound child would have to eat more than 500 leaves to have any harmful effect. The showy colored parts of poinsettias that most people think of as the flowers are actually colored bracts, modified leaves. In Mexico, the poinsettia is a perennial shrub that will grow 10 to 15 feet tall. Source: University of Illinois Extension. This week at heraldreview.com/calendar. Friday, Community Christmas Tree Decorating and Auction, 6 p.m., Mount Pulaski Courthouse, Christmas Carolers, Lighting Ceremony, Holly Jolly Christmas Tree Auction. Saturday, Clothes That Make Me Feel Like $1 Million Christmas Tea, 11 a.m., Pillars Event Center, 303 East Market Street, Taylorville, $25. Proceeds benefit historic preservation. Police: Woman stole $66,500. Credit union worker accused of taking money from 2 accounts. By Tony Reed, Herald and Review. Decatur: A former Decatur credit union employee was arrested Tuesday after police said she stole more than $66,500 from the accounts of 2 customers and spent the cash on eating out and family members. Karen S. Buxton, 49, was booked on a preliminary charge of theft over $10,000. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A sworn affidavit from the Macon County Sheriff's Office said she was suspended from ADM Credit Union on October 23rd, and management told police it was found she had stolen $300 from her cash drawer on that day as well. Buxton, who is free after posting $10,000 bond and is due to be arraigned on December 29th, does not yet have an attorney listed in court documents. A call seeking comment from the credit union was not immediately returned Wednesday. Writing in the affidavit, Sergeant Roger Pope said Buxton had been suspended on the same day an investigation was sparked after a theft victim alerted police. An investigation and audit of the credit union was conducted. which showed the victim had $31,402 stolen from his account between the dates of November 3, 2016 and August 15, Pope wrote. Under police questioning, Pope said Buxton also admitted to stealing an almost identical amount from a female customer, $31,320, between March 3rd and October 10th this year. Pope said Buxton told police she had none of the money remaining after spending it on eating out and helping family members with bills. Pope said she managed to keep her stealing secret for so long by enrolling her victims in online banking. Statements were sent to fictitious email accounts to avoid statements being sent to the customers' homes, which would have exposed the thefts. It was also discovered that there were some transactions that had forged signatures, Pope wrote. Five escaped injury in house fire. Owners say blaze caused by grandchild playing with lighter. By Claire Hettinger, Herald and Review, Decatur. Crews responded to a house fire at the corner of North Monroe and West Marietta Streets Wednesday morning. The owner of the home, Patty Carter, said the fire began when her 9-year-old grandchild was playing with a lighter in a closet. Her grandchild smelled the fire and alerted the rest of the family, who all escaped safely, she said. Five people were home at the time: Carter, her daughter, and two grandchildren and a nephew, who were all home sick from school. Decatur Fire Inspector Dave Gagnon said firefighters were sent to the scene at 8:25 a.m. Monroe Street was closed off from Marietta to Green Streets as crews worked the scene. Smoke was visible from the second-story window in front of the house more than 45 minutes after the fire started. Five fire trucks responded to the incident, and a ladder truck was used to reach the fire. The same house had an electrical fire in November 20, 2016. The walls caught on fire, Carter said. Since then, she had installed a smoke detector and carbon monoxide detector in almost every room, she said. The fire did not spread further than the one second-floor bedroom and closet, the Decatur Fire Department confirmed. Gagnon could not provide a damage estimate Wednesday afternoon, as he said the fire is still under investigation. Carter said she is thankful everyone is safe. I am so glad that God is watching over my family, she said. I know so many people don't have this good outcome like this. Staff writer Jalen Cook contributed to this story. Views differ on health package savings process, by John O'Connor, Associated Press, Springfield. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration says a $60 billion package to provide health care to millions of low-income Illinois residents will save $1 billion over current expenses, while critics deride it as a stealth deal that they say is costing more than they expected. The administration agreed to a 4-year, roughly $15 billion annual contract with 7 managed care organizations that will handle Medicaid coverage for 2.7 million Illinois residents beginning January 1. Rauner's administration predicts savings of up to $300 million a year, largely because insurers have agreed to accept lower payments from the state. But lawmakers of both parties have complained about the procurement process that led to the deal. Representative Greg Harris of Chicago, the House Democrats' budget expert, will conduct a hearing today in Chicago to get answers about the deal and a side contract that the Department of Health Care and Family Services signed with a consultant to shepherd the pact. The annual contract with the managed care organizations will cost the state 43% more than the $10.5 billion Illinois currently pays for Medicaid. But John Hoffman, spokesman for the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, points out that the program will cover 800,000 more people. This transformation will offer quality care to vulnerable residents while ensuring sustainable costs for taxpayers, Hoffman said. The plan will shift administration of health care from the state to private insurers. the administration contends that will lower medical costs because private insurers focus more on prevention. The state's program, called Health Choice Illinois, will cover nearly 90% of the state's 3.1 million residents eligible for Medicaid. Putting more Medicaid clients in managed care coverage was the aim of a 2011 state law. While lawmakers have complained that the contract wasn't done through the standard bidding process, the Department of Health Care and Family Services insists the process was competitive and transparent, and that the agency utilized the purchase of care procedure that's been used for decades for such contracts. Although bids were not required, the agency solicited them from contractors seeking the work, Hoffman said. Critics, including Democratic Comptroller Susana Mendoza, say they hadn't expected the contract to cost as much as it did. She said in a statement that Rauner should have followed an open and transparent review. He refused, and we are now saddled with a massive stealth deal with an outrageous price tag. Hoffman said Healthcare and Family Services Director Felicia Norwood had never provided a cost estimate. Last spring, House Democrats used the impending deal as leverage in their budget negotiations with Rauner. In exchange for business practice changes the GOP governor had long demanded, Democrats insisted on a traditional procurement process for the managed care agreement. Negotiations went by the wayside, however, when Democrats who control the General Assembly adopted an income tax increase and an annual budget over Rauner's vetoes. Conservative Representative David McSweeney is interested in the answers, too. I want a full explanation of why the MCO, Managed Care Organization, contracts were not competitively bid using the procurement code, the Barrington Hills Republican said. I also want a detailed explanation of why the administration recently creased the MCO cost estimate. Briefs, Herald and Review staff and news service. Decatur, Sale offering jewelry making workshop. Soylent Access to Independent Living will have a jewelry making workshop from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, December 8th, and 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, December 9th, in the Decatur Sale Office, 2449 Federal Drive. The cost to attend the workshop is $5. Supplies are charged separately. Call 217-876-8888 or 1-800-358-8080. Tower Hill, former treasurer in court. Former Tower Hill Village Treasurer Nancy Finley made her first Shelby County court appearance Wednesday after being charged with stealing funds from the village and requested time to hire an attorney. She was arrested earlier this month and charged with theft of government property more than $100,000, a Class X felony, with a maximum prison sentence of 6 to 30 years and up to $25,000 in fines. Finley has not entered a plea, and her next court appearance will be January 5th, when prosecutors are expected to outline their case. She appeared before Associate Judge Christopher Matouche. Shelby County State's Attorney Gina Vonderhyde said an investigation by the Illinois State Police revealed the theft of funds. She said the investigation is ongoing and other charges or arrests are possible. Prosecutors allege Finley, who left her job in May, controlled village funds from May 2010 to the end of 2016 when she moved from Tower Hill to the Lake Panna area and took the money for her own use. Vonderhyde said Finley had control of check writing and cash for the Shelby County Village with a population of 609, about 38 miles south of Decatur. Finley declined to speak to reporters after the court appearance. She is free on $50,000 bond. More people buying insurance on exchange. New federal data show that Illinois consumers are purchasing health insurance plans from the Public Affordable Care Act exchange faster this year than they did last year. The Chicago Tribune reports that numbers from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services released Wednesday found that more than 95,000 Illinois residents selected plans during the first 4 weeks of open enrollment this year. That's compared with about 68,000 at about the same time last year. The open enrollment period this year is half as long as last year's time frame. Consumers have until December 15th to sign up for coverage this year. Our View: Shootings Remain Decatur's Outrage, by Herald and Review Editorial Board. Any reaction to a 12-year-old being shot on one of our streets is appropriate. Shock, dismay, anger, sadness. We can't even ponder the story and not have those reactions. Bullets have no place on our streets, and when shooters begin firing towards children, our outrage should be unequivocal. This is an outrage that cannot stand. We have written too many times this year alone in this space about the need for an end to violence. Again, we recognize the wearing nature of readers seeing continual stories about homicides and senseless deaths in our community, state, nation, and world. But we cannot ignore them or normalize them. We continue to need to be furious and in a genuine search for solutions. Just as there's not a single identifiable reason for the ongoing violence, there's no single magic cure for it. Our city working to make itself better can be an important part. Better schools, continuing to build effective after-school programs, investment in struggling neighborhoods, better jobs, all the kinds of things every city, including ours, pursues, and all things that are noble in both goal and accomplishment. We must also encourage and enable witnesses to report what they see. Guns are being fired in the neighborhoods where children and adults are standing outside. There have to be witnesses. And we mean citizens, along with law enforcement, must provide a way for witnesses to do their part and be protected. Because our neighbors deserve every amount of protection we can afford them. Only by finding and incarcerating offenders can we hope to have any opportunity to make that guarantee. We are wary of urging calm. We are wary of expressing sadness, anger, and condolences. Until we come up with a solution and prove we are better than we are showing in 2017, we are only people who read headlines about guns destroying lives, briefly feel a sense of hopelessness and outrage, then go about our day. Shelby County Resident Judge Dies, by Sharon Barraclough, for the Herald and Review, Shelbyville. The death of resident Circuit Judge Alan F. Bennett of Windsor saddened Shelby County officials on Wednesday. "It was quite a shock to hear," said Shelby County Circuit Court Susan Arthur. "We're all a little stunned today." Arthur said Bennett, who died Wednesday, had become ill over the holiday weekend. Arthur said Fourth Circuit Chief Judge Kimberly Kester would assign judges to fill Bennett's seat on an interim basis. The Illinois State Board of Elections has a special filing period from December 18th to 26th for judicial vacancies, and petitions can be taken once the chief judge declares a vacancy. Bennett, a University of Illinois graduate and a 1967 graduate of the University of Tennessee School of Law, was a former state representative, serving parts of Shelby, Moultrie, and Macon counties. He was also a former Moultrie County state's attorney and a state government lobbyist in Springfield. He was elected Shelby County resident judge for the Fourth Circuit in 2012 and had filed for retention on the 2018 ballot. The Fourth Judicial Circuit is composed of Christian, Clay, Clinton, Effingham, Fayette, Jasper, Marion, Montgomery, and Shelby counties. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, November 30th, 2017. Please stay tuned.